Find other great podcasts like this one at podmoth.network.
If tales of ghostly hauntings, Bigfoot encounters, extraterrestrial interactions, and cosmic awakenings are your cup of tea, then join me, Eric Szilagyi, host of Uncomfortable Podcast, every Tuesday at 10 a.m. Make Uncomfortable your home for the topics that reside on the fringe of our reality. Eyewitnesses, researchers, and experiencers, join me on a weekly basis to delve into their paranormal and otherworldly experiences. Heard in over 65 countries worldwide, follow Uncomfortable Podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your casts. Uncomfortable is now presented in video form on YouTube as well. So, as always, my friends, stay uncomfortable.
Hey, what's up, you guys? I'm Catherine.
And I'm Haley.
And we are Saturdays for the Ghouls,
a podcast on the PodMoth Network.
We cover all things spooky, like horror movies, true crime, the supernatural, and spooky stories.
In the most chaotic way possible.
So join your favorite ghoul friends every Saturday, wherever you listen to podcasts.
And become a spooky babe!
So spooky babes, we'll see you
in your nightmares!
Welcome to the Brutal, Bizarre, and Boozy podcast. I'm Declan, the son.
And I'm Jane, the mom. This is the podcast where we talk about brutal crimes, bizarre occurrences, and get you drunk with cocktails themed around one of our stories. To lighten things up, we'd like to end our time with a chaser. Please keep in mind some of our stories might be upsetting to young or sensitive ears.
We love hearing from our listeners, so feel free to contact us by email or social media. You can find our contact info in the show notes for this episode. If you'd like to support us through Patreon, you can find us there at Brutal, Bizarre, and Boozy Podcast, or use the link in our show notes.
Welcome back, everybody. Thank you for joining us again for some brutal, bizarre stories and a nice little boozy cocktail.
Oh, yeah.
What are you going to tell us about today, Declan?
I have this story about the boys on the tracks, which may sound familiar.
Boys on the tracks. And this ties back to your Contra Sandinista thing, huh?
Yes, through Barry Seal. That's how it's tied together. So we'll get into that later, though. What's your story about, Mom?
My story is a potential UFO sighting. And it's like, was the most documented UFO incident in England. But was it a UFO incident? That is the question. So to go with my story, I have the Elderflower Aviation Gin Cocktail. And I chose it because of aviation. And this story happened on an Air Force base. So aviation.
Yeah.
This drink is 1.5 ounces of gin, 3/4 of an ounce of lemon juice, 1/2 ounce of maraschino cherry liqueur, 1/2 ounce of elderflower liqueur, garnished with a Luxardo cherry and a lemon twist. Steps are to chill a coupe glass, add all your liquid ingredients into a shaker with ice and shake well, and then strain into your chilled glass and garnish. So, are you ready? I don't know how I'm going to feel about this drink.
So, you don't because like
I like elderflower liqueur. I like gin. I like lemon juice. Maraschino cherry liqueur sometimes is really gross and sometimes it's okay. I've had good drinks with it and I've had bad ones. So, we're about to find out if it's good or bad.
Yes.
Are you ready? Let's go. Yes. Nope, bad. Terrible.
Yeah.
That is garbage. Absolute trash. It is extremely medicine-y. And I think it's because of that cherry liqueur.
That's...
No.
I would definitely not order that again.
I hate that so much. I would rather drink tequila than drink that drink. And so for all our friends out there who know me, that's saying a lot. Because I hate tequila a whole lot.
Nah, not a big fan of tequila.
Mm. Ugh, that was nasty. Okay, throw that drink. That is definitely a drain drink. Ugh. Okay. Ooh. I wish I had something else to drink besides water now to make that taste go away. But I don't, so sadly, we'll just continue on with the story. We're going to go to England for this story, like I mentioned, specifically to Rendlesham Forest. This forest is about six square miles. What's that? You've heard of this one?
I think I've heard of it.
I had not heard of it before. And the fact that my sources were saying that this was like the most documented UFO sighting in England, and the fact that I've never heard of it before, maybe I live under a rock. I don't know. I don't know. But it is supposed to be very well documented. This forest, Rendlesham Forest, like I said, is about 6 square miles, located in Suffolk County, and sits between two military bases, RAF Woodbridge and RAF Bentwood. RAF Woodbridge is partially inside of the forest boundaries itself. In December of 1980, both of these bases were operated by the U.S. Air Force. At around 3 a.m. on a late December day/night, reports came in of strange lights in the night sky. Security patrol officers at Woodbridge noted seeing strange lights descending into the forest about a third of a mile past the east gate of the base. So the east gate is on the edge of the forest, and then about a third of a mile into the forest is where they saw these lights. They believed the lights were coming from an aircraft that had gone down, so they went to investigate. When they arrived at the location, they saw a triangular object that was hovering. It was glowing and appeared to be metallic with several colored lights.
Why is it always triangles? Triangles and tic-tacs.
Well, there's also the disc shape, though. Like, the saucer shape.
The cube inside of us. A sphere.
The cube inside of the sphere is the one that boggles my mind, because that is not aerodynamic. You could say a tic-tac kind of aerodynamic. You could say a triangle is aerodynamic. You cannot say a cube inside of a sphere is very aerodynamic.
Well, our understanding of aerodynamics, let's get that
true.
Clear.
Well, maybe. I don't know. As the security officers approached the object, it seemed to move away from them through the forest. They also noted that the animals located at a nearby farm started to act very upset, describing the animals to be in a frenzy. Which...
Frenzy? That's a weird...
Disturbing.
I guess it's British people explaining it.
It's not, though. It's Americans. Because the bases were run by Americans. It's the U.S. Air Force that saw
this. The base doesn't have farm animals.
But there's a farm next to the base.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So there's wildlife close by. Or farm life, I guess, if you want to consider it that. About an hour later, local police arrived at the scene, but couldn't find any strange lights or evidence of anything unusual. However, they did note that there was a light in the far distance, but that light was coming from the lighthouse about 5 miles away on the coastline. So they see a light and they're like, yeah, but that's the lighthouse. So what? That's not a big deal. Why did you call the police to tell us there was a lighthouse light? Lights. We know there's a lighthouse light. That's what a lighthouse is supposed to do. Once the sun came up, servicemen returned to the site and noticed depressions in the dirt in a triangular pattern. Again, triangular metal thing they see, and now there's triangular depression. There's like three spots in the dirt in a triangular pattern. They also noticed broken branches and scorch marks on trees nearby. Local police returned to the area, but believed the markings were left by animals. Specifically, the depressions were believed to be digging spots of rabbits. So they're like, whatever, rabbits dig holes. Why? Quit calling us.
Dug a hole in a perfect triangular pattern.
In a perfect triangle, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So 2 days later, in the early morning, Deputy Base Commander Lieutenant Colonel Charles Halt and several other military members went to the site where the lights had been seen. Halt made a recording during his investigation, telling about what actions they were taking while looking into the matter and what their findings were. So basically, he's tape recording all the stuff they're doing. They're walking into the area and they notice these things, and he's recording all of it. It's important for later. They took radiation readings of the triangular impressions and then of the surrounding area. But the readings were very low and wouldn't be considered abnormal. So they took these readings and basically it was worth nothing. Whatever. Halt also reported on that night that he saw three unusual lights in the sky just above the horizon. He commented that the brightest of the lights hovered for 2 to 3 hours and would periodically send a beam of light downward. So it's bright light in the distance.
Thinking farmyard animals.
And then it also sends a light down. I don't know. 2 weeks after the incident, Halt recorded all of his findings and reports in a memo that was sent to the Ministry of Defense, who then in turn did an investigation of their own. However, it appears that investigation was rather superficial and didn't go into any depth, which conspiracy theorists, of course, say that indicates that something was covered up. Some shady shit. Who knows? Since then, the incident has been a topic of discussion among the UFO community and skeptics. The tape Halt made during his investigation in the forest was released and transcribed by UFO researchers. Many years later, interviews with eyewitnesses were conducted, with some of the witnesses claiming they believed the lighthouse of the nearby farm was the source of the lights. So the police that showed up thought it was the lighthouse, and now some of the eyewitnesses are like, yeah, we saw a light, but it had to be the lighthouse. But other eyewitnesses think it was not a lighthouse at all. One eyewitness who worked on the base claimed that he touched an alien spacecraft. Like, he reached out and touched that triangle metal thing.
Did he experience high amounts of radiation or die from cancer later in life?
No.
Okay,
he did not.
Because that seems to be the theme with people that touch UFOs.
True.
Sick from radiation poisoning, or they get cancer.
Yeah. In 2010, Halt, who by then was retired from the Air Force, filed and signed a notarized affidavit about the incident. He also went on to claim that he believed the lights were extraterrestrial in origin, that the U.S. and UK governments knew this, and they covered it up. So he's the lieutenant commander. He's the second in charge, I believe, on the base. And he does this investigation and files all this information and paperwork and makes recordings. And then is like, it was covered up because nobody did anything about it. So he thinks it was covered up. However, he was criticized by his former commander for the statements of a cover-up. The commander also denied that any serviceman at the time made claims of touching an alien spacecraft when the incident occurred. So the one serviceman who said, "I touched the triangle," apparently he didn't say that at the time. So the commander of the base was like, "That didn't happen. Because I interviewed everybody and nobody said they touched anything." So, I don't know. Some skeptics believe the whole thing was an intentional prank. It was reported that a former U.S. security policeman claimed that he modified lights on his police vehicle and would drive through the forest. Now,
okay,
I don't know if he did it with the intent of making people think it was a UFO or something weird, or if he did it because the modification to the lights made his job easier, or I don't know.
I'm trying to think what kind of modification would make a car look like a UFO shining lights down
right
from the sky. Did he put a giant pole on the top of his car with a light shining downwards? I mean,
that would descend.
Yeah.
As he was driving? I don't know.
That doesn't make much sense.
It does not. But there is no evidence that the guy that modified his police vehicle, there's no evidence that he did that at the time of the incident. So did he do it in late December 1980, or was it just some other time that he did it and it just happened to correlate to the location? But not the timing. Nobody knows. Another explanation that has been suggested was, again, the lighthouse. Several people, including local law enforcement, noted the light from the lighthouse could be seen in the forest, even though it was about 5 miles away, which to me is pretty amazing. But that particular lighthouse was the brightest in the area. So
it's also the whole point of a lighthouse is being able to see light from far away.
From so. Far away. But the 5 miles away, I don't know. That seems like a long distance to me. But apparently people saw it that far away and they were like, whatever.
I think Mythbusters did a thing about this. But your eyes are able to pick up light so much further than any other thing. Like,
makes
just
sense.
Someone sparking a lighter like a mile away, a mile might be an exaggeration, but you can see the light from a lighter, just a small flame. So if it's the brightest lighthouse around,
yeah,
then I'd think maybe you'd be able to see it from 5 miles away if it was like there's no mountains in the way or anything. Like if it's just a... Maybe,
it was open, yeah. Another explanation to explain the lights seen moving downward is that... potentially it was a meteor or a fireball that fell to the area. As I mentioned before, skeptics believe the depressions in the dirt were attributed to rabbit holes. Some skeptics believe that the bright lights Halt reported, the ones that were shining right above the horizon and would periodically put a beam downwards, some people say that Lieutenant Commander Halt was mistaken as to the downward beam and that those lights were just stars and nothing more. Because some stars are really bright. I don't know.
When was this again?
1980.
So, yeah, there was probably light pollution, probably harder to see. I'm just trying to come up like with any... other explanation.
Right.
You explain all these things, but they don't sound like
they don't sound real credible.
Good. Yeah.
Yeah.
No.
Many years later, the Ministry of Defense conducted an investigation into UFO sightings. One of the people involved in the investigation and subsequent report believed UFO sightings to be a simple explanation. He said an unknown plasma, specifically, that's how precise they were. Just an unknown plasma. An unknown plasma could emit an electromagnetic field that would interfere with aircraft technology and could also cause cognitive impairment.
Whoa. Okay. I was on board until you said that.
Yes. That's the thing that I was like, again, I was on board with that and then went, huh?
Cognitive impairment.
It was his belief that the servicemen who initially reported the incident had come in contact with this unknown plasma and suffered some mental deficit as a result. He thinks that the plasma could cause hallucinations. And so all of it was just a hallucination because they came into contact with this unknown plasma.
Jesus.
That sounds like bullshit. So for scientific purposes to be credible, you have to be able to say it was XYZ and not an unknown XYZ, an unknown thing.
Yeah. I feel plasma would be something you'd be able to measure, and then you could say, hey, there's more plasma here than.
Yeah.
And plasma is such a weird thing. Is it?
It is a weird thing.
Is it a.
I don't really get it, but to specifically say it's an unknown plasma, I think it just detracts from the credibility, my opinion.
You know, Google will tell me what plasma is. I'm curious now. A liquid part of your blood, also considered force-state matter, following solid, liquid, and gas. It's an ionized gas containing ions and free electrons, which can charge particles that move independently. In the context of blood, plasma carries blood cells throughout the body. In the universe, plasma is most abundant in form of matter, making it nearly 99.9% of the observable universe.
Oh, okay. Plasma, it still doesn't.
Plasma is an ionized gas, meaning it's a gas where a significant number of atoms have lost or gained electrons, becoming... I don't know what any of this means.
But I don't
plasma
either.
Is also stars, nebulae, and the space between stuff. Stars. Plasma is just everything.
Yeah, just everything.
On Earth, examples of plasma include lightning, auroras, the light emitted from fluorescent bulbs.
Okay.
What does that mean? That just, it's just light?
I don't know. That was this guy's explanation of it, though. Even though there's a lot of skepticism surrounding the incident, there's a big draw to the area. To accommodate for the interest, the Forestry Commission created a trail to the area and nicknamed it the UFO Trail, even though the official stance is that no UFO landed there. They still created a trail that you can hike down and called it the UFO Trail. They also commissioned and installed an art piece to honor the sightings. The art piece is a metal sculpture of a UFO based on the sketches and descriptions given by eyewitnesses. So it's a triangular metal craft, if you want to call it that. The Forestry Commission also placed logs at the site to indicate where the depressions in the dirt were reported. So they've got vertical logs, like posts, to be where the quote-unquote rabbit hole diggings were. Yeah. As with most UFO reports, there are true believers and those who think it was just imagination or, as that one scientist said, hallucinations. Because they came into contact with the unknown plasma.
It's hysteria.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, all right. That whole story seemed like nonsense.
It's wild. It's wild that it's like it was, but it wasn't. But most UFO things are.
Seems like nonsense.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay, let's talk about the boys on the tracks.
Okay.
At around 4 a.m. on August 23rd, 1987, the crew aboard a Union Pacific freight train were traveling through Arkansas when they notice something strange on the tracks. Two motionless bodies lie perpendicular on the train tracks about 300 feet ahead of the train, partially wrapped in a green tarp. After blowing the air horn and activating the emergency brakes, the train ran over the two bodies.
No!
More than 1,000 feet of train rolled over the bodies before it eventually came to a halt.
Oh, that's gnarly.
Yeah, this should be a movie. Like, that's the opening scene of a movie right there. Just
some
conductor minding his business, and then...
poor guy. Ugh.
Yeah. Crew aboard the train called local law enforcement and reported the incident to the railroad company. Police arrived at the scene about 40 minutes after the accident. A .22 rifle was discovered near the bodies, as well as a flashlight.
Okay.
When an autopsy was performed, it determined that the boys were 16-year-old Don Henry and 17-year-old Kevin Ives.
No.
After the autopsy, the police announced that the deaths were accidental.
Okay.
They stated that the boys had smoked weed, approximately 20 joints, according to the person that ran the autopsy.
What?
Yeah. That's just crazy.
How?
Okay. So they stated they smoked 20 joints, got high, fell asleep on the train tracks, and were unable to hear the 50-mile-an-hour, 6,000-ton 75 car train barreling towards them.
A bullshit.
I don't care how high you are. You can't get that high on weed that you can't hear and see a train coming at you.
That's bullshit. I'm saying that's bullshit.
Since this seemed a little far-fetched, the parents of Don and Kevin hired their own investigators, and some interesting information came to light. While visiting the site, a family member discovered a foot that the police had just simply left behind.
What? How do you not pick up the parts?
That shows how diligent they were at trying to solve this case.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Yeah. So the family, they hired another person to do an autopsy. And that person discovered evidence of stab wounds on Don's body and appeared that Kevin's head was caved in by his own rifle. So that was the .22 that they had found on the scene.
Okay.
The case was then changed from accidental death to potential homicide. However, Sheriff James Steed refused to accept this information and refused to investigate the deaths any further until Kevin's mother ran a smear campaign against him.
Way to go, Mom.
So yeah, she was parading all around town with signs being like, this guy's an incompetent asshole. And so he was like, fine, I'll investigate if you stop talking shit about me, basically. That's what happened.
Wow.
Yeah, and the criticism made him run a real investigation this time. Well,
that's good. Real.
Quote unquote real. We'll see.
Right.
Detective John Brown was assigned to the case, and shortly after he was given the case, a higher-up in the police department highly discouraged John from investigating anything involved in the murders. So he was assigned this case, and a higher-up was like, don't do that.
Close your eyes. Walk away.
Eventually, Tom Newhouse came forward as a witness. Tom stated that he and his friends, including a kid named Keith Coney, were out late that night looking for a reported marijuana patch near the train tracks when they spotted five men with flashlights walking down the train tracks. Tom was able to identify the man at the front of the pack as his mother's ex-boyfriend and county prosecutor, Dan Harmon.
What? Okay. Yeah.
They also saw the two boys walking towards the group from the other direction.
Okay, so they're walking towards each other.
Yes.
Okay. Dan, I was thinking maybe the boys were being followed by this group of men, but they're walking towards each other. No. Okay.
So The boys' parents knew that they were out hunting that night. They're doing something called spotlighting, where they one person has a flashlight and that lets you see the eyes of animals, and then you can shoot them. And that's what they were doing. They were out spotlighting, which I think that's is kinda illegal now.
I was gonna say, isn't that illegal?
I'm pretty sure that's poaching, considered poaching.
I think so.
Well, I think you can do it with certain species, like rabbits and squirrels and chipmunks and shit. But because it was only a 22 rifle, you're not gonna. That's just for like squirrels.
Gotcha. Okay.
So, according to Tom, Dan saw the boys and yelled at them to come over to the group, and there was a gunshot heard.
No.
The thinking it was an accidental one from Dan or something like that, because the second the gunshot was heard, both Kevin and Don ran to a nearby grocery store. Witnesses reported seeing the boys at the grocery store when a police car approached them. Two officers were seen grabbing the boys, beating them, and then throwing them into the car and driving back to the train tracks.
Oh, shit. Okay.
And in the time that the boys were seen at the grocery store to the train tracks, they had died at some point.
Oh, okay.
Throughout the course of the investigation, a total of 5 witnesses died under mysterious circumstances.
That's a lot.
Keith Coney, who was with Tom when they saw the 5 men and the 2 boys approach, he was set to testify in front of a grand jury about this case, but was run off the road while he was riding his motorcycle, subsequently dying in the car, like an accident.
Oh my gosh.
Keith McCassell took some aerial photos of the crime scene and was stabbed over 100 times in his garage. McCaskill's neighbor saw 5 men in black masks approach his neighbor's house in the night of the murder. And the neighbor was subsequently charged with the murder.
What?
Yeah.
Oh my.
Yeah. So this screams dirty sheriff to me.
It screams dirty somebody.
Yeah. Greg McCollins, who was also set to testify, was shot 3 times by a shotgun.
Okay.
Daniel Bearden, who was a key witness, disappeared without a trace. And Jeff Edwards' body was found in a landfill later that year.
Good.
So 5 different witnesses died or went missing.
Wow. That's.
So why were
somebody's
the boys
doing something shady?
Yeah. Why were they murdered? Let's talk about it.
Okay.
Let's take a look back on last week's story of the Contras versus Sandinistas. If you haven't listened to it, go listen to that one. Kind of sets the stage for this.
Yeah, I don't see how those would necessarily go together.
So this took place in Alexander, Arkansas.
Okay.
2 miles from the MENA airport.
Oh.
Or not 2 miles, sorry. Like a 2-hour drive. So Barry Seal was flying drugs in and out of the MENA airport.
Mm-hmm.
And while Barry was murdered a year before the boys were murdered, Barry had set up this pipeline that was taken over by other pilots, basically.
Okay.
So they were, after the pipeline was set up, key witnesses for the like years above it who lived near the MENA airport and in Alexander had seen low flying planes with their lights turned off, dropping off packages out of the plane. So they'd fly over and then toss them out.
Toss some stuff.
It's believed that Dan Harmon was working with the governor of Arkansas to facilitate the transportation of drugs into Arkansas. So that would be why Dan Harmon and the 5 other guys were on the train tracks that night. They were looking for the drop off.
Do I want to know who the governor of Arkansas was?
Well, let me tell you. Former President Bill Clinton.
That's what I thought you were going to say. That is totally what I thought you were going to say.
Yeah. Yeah. So
whoops-a-daisy.
almost 10 years after the deaths of Dan Harmon, after 10 years after the deaths, Dan Harmon was arrested and charged with racketeering, conspiracy, extortion, drug possession, and drug possession with intent to distribute, and was sentenced to 11 years in prison.
Wow.
Yeah. Years later, a show called Obstruction of Justice told this story and claimed that the two police officers that had been seen picking up the boys from the grocery store were likely the murderers.
Makes sense.
These officers attempted to sue the show for defamation, and they lost the lawsuit.
Really?
Yes.
Whoops.
So that is the story about the boys on the tracks.
I did not like that story.
Super bizarre. Super bizarre.
Yeah.
It's
bizarre and brutal and gross and conspiracies and cover-ups and drugs and wow.
Yeah.
Very I did not like that.
Yeah.
That unless somebody talks, they're never going to know.
Like, yeah. Dirty Sheriff, I think, is working with the dirty prosecutor who is working Bill Clinton.
The governor.
Not just any governor, and Bill Clinton.
He doesn't have any conspiracies of other deaths linked to him.
He doesn't anywhere. Have a whole book called The Clinton Deaths or whatever.
Yeah, no.
No, Bill Clinton would never
kill
anybody. And
nobody
neither
has
one of us are suicidal.
Yeah, right. No. Nobody's ever mentioned that name in correlation to other weird, mysterious deaths. Never.
Yeah. The whole story is fucking fishy.
I kind of don't want to do stories like that because of the names. Because it's
I know it's a little scary, but
it is.
This is all like they made a fucking movie about this and TV shows
that's
about
true.
It. So.
It's not like we came up with any new information.
Deaths, but yeah, we're not journalists reporting on new shit. We're probably the 400th podcast to talk about this exact information.
At least. Yeah, they're not coming after us. Good point.
I hope not, at least. Please don't come after us.
Right. We don't know anything.
Yeah. We don't know anything that's not public information.
Right. Yikes.
You have a chaser for us?
I do have a chaser. My chaser is a watch recommendation for a Netflix show called The Four Seasons. It has Tina Fey and Steve Carell in it.
I told you about it.
Last week when we were FaceTiming.
Sounds familiar. Because I've seen a bunch of people post it and I'm like,
It's a fantastic show, but I wonder if it is more appealing to people of my age demographic because it's very, I don't want to say it's for old people because I'm not an old person, so people tell me, but the story is about people who are like in their mid-50s and they're friends and they go on trips together and the funny parts is that it's super true where you're like, they're talking about this friend and they're like, I don't want to be around that friend because that person makes me feel weird and I don't want to be like, I don't want to show them that I feel weird around them and then they get stuck being with that person. And it's just a funny show with hilarious circumstances and these friends get into shenanigans and, you know. It's just a good show. So I highly recommend it. If you haven't seen it, go watch it because it's a good show. And good actors are in it. I mean, there's other big name actors in it too, but those were the two that came off the top of my head. So what's your chaser?
My chaser is the show Bad Thoughts with Tom Segura.
Yes.
It's very, very weird. Like every episode is, it's almost, it's like kind of like a sketch show, but set
yeah,
in
it's
like
shorts.
A different format.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like 2 to 3
short like stories.
Short stories per episode, and they yeah. kind of bleed into the next, but it's so weird, so funny. It's kind of like we all have bad thoughts that we don't act on. Like, oh, I right. want to throw this coffee at this barista's face. But he yeah. makes like a short about it. And since he's a comedian, he adds a bunch of comedy to it. But it's pretty funny.
It's such a weird show.
And maybe smoking something before, but it's pretty funny.
Yeah. We haven't finished it. We've watched, I think, 2 episodes. And the short stories,
the whole thing is like 2.5 hours long. Like I watched
yeah,
it.
Yeah, it's not very long.
One night.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There are stories that you watch it and go, oh my God, did they really just put that out there? So yeah. there's some odd little
really
shorts
like the
in
first
there.
One where he's the spy and it goes wrong.
Oh, like, the hitman?
Yeah, the hitman.
I was laughing so hard at that hitman story.
Really funny.
I could not stop laughing.
Yeah, you guys should go check it out. It's pretty funny.
Definitely.
Alrighty. Well, I think that's the end of today's episode.
It is. Thanks for joining us, friends.
Yeah. Go ahead and do all the fun stuff. Drop a comment. Give us a rating. All that fun stuff.
Yeah, we appreciate it.
Yeah. Love you,
Mom. Love you, bud. Bye.
Bye.
Hey, friends. Thank you for supporting our podcast. Please share our show with your brutal and bizarre friends. Give us a boozy follow on your favorite podcast platform. If you're feeling extra generous, we'd appreciate a 5-star rating or review as well. But maybe do that sober so all the letters are in the right place.
You can find all our contact information in the show notes. We love hearing from you, and if you're interested in helping us stock the bar for our future boozy episodes, you can find our Patreon link in the show notes as well.